You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. An annual tradition is the predictions of my fellow pundits, Neil Folds, Alan McManus and Phil Yates. And you're about to hear a discussion we had on Sunday at the Tour Championship, so before the final, between Ronnie O'Sullivan and Mark Williams, giving our views on the championship in general. We each picked a sort of champion who we thought would win it and a potential outsider, and just had a general discussion about the tournament. There is a squeaky door in the background, and this is another tradition, a sort of extraneous noise that nobody really wants, but you've got it anyway. It's part of the firmament of these things, so just to warn you on that. But anyway, it's a good chat, as you'd expect, with Alan, Neil and Phil, and, well, here it is. Now, what we should say at the start, of course, is we're recording this the day before the qualifying starts. We don't know who's going to qualify, and we know there's some very dangerous people in there. Neil Robertson is the most obvious. So, you know, one of our choices, if they draw him in round one, they could well get knocked out. Yeah, so that's it, basically. Now, Phil, last year, you picked Mark Selby, I think, as your main choice, and you picked Luca Brasel as your outsider, and they were both in the final. So there'll be people tuning into this thinking, what's he going to say this year? What's he going to say this year? So you're going to go first, your main choice for world champion.
Okay, well, I want to maintain that record of producing both finalists, so I'm going to pick one from each half. And consequently, I'm going to take a very, very safe route. I know that Judd Trump played a pretty poor tournament at the Tour Championship, as he did at the Riyadh season World Masters of Snooker. His defeats were the result of two very poor performances. But he's won five tournaments this year, and I think if he gets in a groove, he's a player who relies on coordination and confidence. If he's got both, I think he's going to be very difficult to stop in the bottom half. Obviously, his recent results against Ronnie O'Sullivan, who he's seeded to meet in the semi-finals, aren't good. But there's no guarantee that O'Sullivan will get that far either. Clearly, O'Sullivan is the favourite, quite rightly. The way he's playing is tremendous. But I'm going to go with Judd Trump as my main selection.
I mean, it's a good choice. The only problem I have with Trump at the Crucible, he always seems to start slow. Round one, he never seems to play well in round one. And, of course, that means sometimes he does lose, as he did last year. Other times, I mean, even when he won it, he probably should have lost to Tetchaya. And he scraped through a few others. So I don't know why that is, why some players... I mean, Neil Robertson, he always seems to start the opposite. Like, in world-class form. I suppose what you want to do is play well enough to get through, but maybe save your best to the end.
And it's ironic, because the last time someone was like Neil Robertson in the qualifying draw, an absolute colossus, was after he won the China Open, Judd Trump. Mm. And who did he draw in the first round? Neil Robertson. Maybe Robertson is going to draw Trump and it's going to be roles reversed. I just think that Judd, he's so good. He's such a consistent tournament winner. And I think actually not going too far in the Tour Championship in some respects might have done him some good. It will sharpen him up. He's got two clear weeks of practice before the big event. And I agree with you, he is a slow starter up there. But once he gets into the groove, I think he's going to be hard to prevent. And also, I think it's a case of all of these tournaments he's winning, but he hasn't won a proportionate amount of Triple Crown events. So maybe the motivation there will be so strong that that carries him through as well.
Maybe we'll have to beat Ronnie in the semis. I mean, you know, we don't know how it's going to pan out. He's struggled to beat him of late, to be fair.
Well, he played very poorly against O'Sullivan over in Saudi. I mean, the balls he missed, I couldn't quite believe. And if you do get a bad sequence of results going against one player, it can be detrimental. It always amazes me when players say, oh, head-to-heads mean nothing. They mean a lot, especially if they're completely one-sided and recently. But, as I said, there's no guarantee that O'Sullivan's going to get that far anyway. I think if they did meet in the semi-finals, even though I've picked Trump to win it, the bookmakers quite rightly would have to make O'Sullivan favourite. It would be a cracking match.
Yeah, well, Trump's... now you've tipped him, his odds are shortening, but as we speak, if people are listening to this, the bookies are running scared. Alan, over to you.
OK, well, I haven't conferred with Phil this morning or last night or this week, but I'm also actually going to go for Judd Trump. I'll give some of the reasons why. I think you look for some criteria as to a potential winner. Obviously, he's won it before, so he's not even a potential winner. But you're looking for someone who is not, is not afraid to win it. We know that he's not afraid to win it. Of course he's not. He's up there, you know, what is he, above Davis now in ranking wins. There is some concern, as you say, about the head-to-head, recent head-to-head with O'Sullivan. Can he, if they get to the semi-final, which is a big if, it's a big ask, but can he handle that? I think the answer is he can, but obviously will he? Will he be able to handle it? My one concern with Judd these days, strangely enough, which wouldn't have been the case 2 or 3 years ago, I think his B and C game isn't as strong as perhaps it maybe was 3, 4, 5 years ago. When he drops beneath it, which he has this week, obviously getting a pretty tame loss to Mark Williams, 10-4, that might be the kick up the backside that he needs a couple of weeks away from the Crucible, who knows, but I do think he's got obviously a couple of weeks, 2.5 weeks to get himself ready. I think he will. I think little brother will be on his case. Listen, you've only won this thing once. It was 5 years ago. It's about time we had another one. As I say, we obviously know he can win it. Yes, there is some concern that he lost to McGill last year. What was it, 10-6 or something in the first round, or 10-7? Pretty tamely. That might be a concern. But his form, obviously, mid-season, pre-Christmas, was awesome. He's won since then. He's in the winning habit. He's used to playing in big occasions. He's as good a big occasion player almost as Ronnie is, in my opinion. It might not be a terrible thing if and when we get to the semi-finals, and if he plays O'Sullivan, that he doesn't play him in the final. Maybe the semi-final's the one where he would want to get him. I don't know, but I kind of think he's going to turn things round in the next couple of weeks and put in a big performance at Sheffield.
I mean, what's in his favour, apart from being brilliant, obviously, is if you look at the tournaments he's won this season, the flat 1-8, he's had to play every day. And at the Crucible, last week, basically, you play every day. You know, that's not an issue for him. You know, he's fit, and that's something he could handle. Neil's very quietly got the Crucible almanac there, just keeping his counsel. You come armed with the big guns, Neil.
No, I was just looking at what score he lost to McGill. It was actually 10-6. I mean, I suppose, like, McGill, he's someone you don't really want, is it, in the first foot. You know, if he was to, you know, to be in the draw, you don't want him. There's a few you don't want. That would probably be involved in all of our thoughts, really. You don't want Neil Robertson, you wouldn't want Jack Lazowski, you mightn't want Hossain. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm going to go against Judd. I'm going to go against Ronnie. I just see it. I don't see it as cut and dried. It very rarely is in the Crucible, as we know.
Yeah.
But whether I'm going in the right route, I have no idea. Sean Murphy, I'm going to go with. Quiet season, great player, 4 world finals, he's won it. At times, I think he's looked like he's coming back to form. Recently, in losing, he lost to Judd in Saudi. I thought he was unlucky there. Thought he played well in the World Open. It's just not happening for him. I know that there will be other things with Sean, and people will be throwing their arms up in the air if he wins a couple of rounds. Why are you commentating and playing? Not getting into that. That's for him to deal with. If he feels he's there as a proper player, he is the forgotten man for me at the moment. He's a completely forgotten man. He is he's got all the credentials, as we know, and I think he's playing well. He needs a bit of help. I mean, it could be, as we speak, we don't know who's going to win this final, but he could be seeded 8, which means he'll be in, might be a favourable draw next to Luka, who I think might play well anyway, the Crucible. And once he gets into the tournament, he's got everything that is required. And I think he's still got it. So, Sean Murphy for me, I'm taking a bit of a punt on that, I realise. But am I? I mean, he's a yeah. top player.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It sounds both left field and also not obvious, but, you know, he's a top 8 player. Absolutely. The only thing I'm concerned about is nothing to do with the punditry, actually. It's a different thing. He's got this recurring foot injury. And if that flared up at the Crucible, having to play every day those long sessions, he'd probably have no chance because he'd just be on his feet too much. But that's, hopefully that doesn't.
It was definitely in my thoughts. It was going to be my pick for a lot of the good reasons that Neil has given. I also think the last year or whatever it is with this 2 and 3Q business has been put on the back burner. It's been actually put to bed now, and I think that's going to help him. And Neil's absolutely correct about his credentials as a potential winner. He's got previous. I remember that match against Kyron. He trailed whatever it was.
4-0.
Yeah, at 10-3 or something.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant last year's final of this. No, yeah.
Yeah,
he whacked, didn't he? Like,
yes, it turned in the yellow pocket. Yeah. He trailed about 10-3 or something and won 17-13 or 14. Mm. He can do serious damage. I think it's a good shout, actually.
Just one thing I'd like to say. If he turns up with 3 Qs, he's no longer my selection.
Okay. You're listening, Sean. Pay attention. Well, I'm kind of sticking with this. I'm speaking the day after he got kind of hammered by Mark Williams, but I've sort of thought Mark Allen since the turn of the year. I mean, the last two seasons he's become a consistent winner. He's always won the odd event, but now his whole mindset has changed. He's changed physically. He sort of reset things almost. He's like sort of started a new phase of his career. He's trying to balance his game between scoring and defence. Maybe hasn't always got that balance right, but even this week, you know, he had 6 centuries to get to the semis of the Tour Championship. I thought his attitude actually in that semi-final, 8-0 down, was exemplary. I mean, you know, signing autographs, all that was brilliant. But actually, when the match restarted, he didn't just swing his cue at everything. He played properly. And, you know, it got a little bit tasty, didn't it? Had he sort of gone 9-6, you never know what could have happened. He's tough, I think. Obviously, Crucible record is not good. But last year, under this new sort of Mark Allen, he got to the semis. That match with Selby that possibly is still going on in a parallel universe. You know, he nearly beat him, and he nearly beat Mark Selby over 4 sessions, just came up short. You know, that tells me that his Crucible sort of game has changed. And I think if you're looking for a first-time winner, I'd say he's now number one on that list. You know, someone who hasn't won it before. I think Mark Allen, definitely this is probably, well, I think it's his best chance. That's caveating all the draw and all that stuff. I'm not even really looked about who he would play. I just think he's up for it. And I actually done a piece in the programme about sort of following the legacy of Higgins and Taylor. And it was interesting what he said, because he knows all about that from his dad. He wasn't born when they won all that stuff. He likes being linked to it. But it's interesting what he said. He said, first and foremost, I want to win it for myself. Not for Northern Ireland or be part of that. I want to win it for myself. And that attitude is actually good to hear. So, Mark Allen is my pick. Don't know whether anyone has any views on that.
The only negative I would say is that, you know, the saying, in all things moderation. With Allen, it seems to me, if he finds that middle ground in terms of his average shot time, he's so much more effective. Okay, the days of the hustle and bustle when he was one of the quickest players on the circuit, one of the most attacking players on the circuit, we know they've been shelved. On the other hand, I think if he goes a little too negative and a little too slow, it's detrimental to him. So I think he needs to find the middle ground, as he did in the second session against Williams in the Tour Championship, even though ultimately it was to no avail. If he finds that middle ground and that perfect tempo, then yes, for me, he's a threat. But history tells us it's really difficult, the slog of the Crucible over 17 days. And if you play slowly and negatively, you've got to be a phenomenal mental animal to win. Now, Ebden did in 2002, we know that. But generally speaking, it's attractive players who can win frames easily. and who can get through that multiple test of sessions without taking too much out of themselves.
That would be my concern with Mark Allen. Can someone in 2024, you know, what is it, 22 years or so after Ebden winning, can somebody at 20, between 27 and 29 seconds a shot, win the championship? I'm not so sure they can. Mark obviously is capable of ramping it up and playing in the low 20s, of course he is. His semi-final here against Mark Williams, when the shackles come off, he showed us what he can do. He can win 5-6 frames in a row. But can he do that from the gun? And that, I think, is a bit of a, not a problem, but it's not so much, I don't think so much he's the problem if he plays quite slowly, shall we say. The problem is the people he's going to come up against. They're going to win 4, 5, 6 frames on the spin, because that happens obviously every year at Sheffield, like Luca did last year, coming out 10-6 down against Ronnie, and he wiped him out with 7 in a row to get through. You need to do that at some, actually quite a few stages of the championship if you're going to go a long way. I'm not saying Mark Allen can't do that, but will he do it? I'm not so sure.
Well, yeah, maybe. I just think there's more than one way to skin a crucible cat, which is not a sentence anyone's ever said before. The two most successful players, well, the last, if you look at the last 12 World Championships, 8 have been won by the Ronnie O'Sullivan or Mark Selby. Different players, different sorts of players. By the way, both of those two are worth watching again. I mean, we've not sort of talked about Ronnie. Well, let's talk about Ronnie, actually. We're recording this on the day of the Tour Championship final. We don't know whether he's going to win or not, but whether he does or not. An unbelievable seasoning by his standards, and this sort of almost destiny of Triple Eight, you know, you've done the UK, the Masters, the World. It sort of feels a little bit like a couple of years ago when it was about the seventh. There's that feeling of it's going to happen. Now, none of us have said it will, but no one would be surprised if it did.
No, only a lunatic would say that he couldn't win it after all the things he's done. I mean, everything points to it, doesn't it? You know, he said all those things about 8-8-8, and now he's got the chance to do it. And clearly, he's the man to beat. I mean, you know, Judd hasn't beaten him since 2020. Should they meet, that's a fact. And he hasn't particularly looked like beating him in some of those matches since either. Obviously, Ronnie's got a chance. I just didn't really want to think about Ronnie winning it again, given that he's done so much winning that, you know, even he isn't a machine. If he did, it would be one of the great sporting achievements in snooker or outside of snooker. So I wish him luck with that. And, you know, the tournament's always better with him in it. But I just thought maybe not this year. I've got no obvious reason why, but I have seen him go to the Crucible in some years. You know, the year he lost to James Cahill, various other years when he just hasn't really turned up. So I suppose if you're going to get him beat, if that's what you're looking to do, you probably need to get him beat early.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the outsiders now. I mean, it can be someone in the qualifying. Obviously, you know, we don't know who's going to come through, or it can be a sort of player low down in the top six. Or be whoever you like. Phil, back to you.
The word outsider is subjective. People might say, this guy isn't an outsider, but based on his form this season, in my mind, he most certainly is. And I'm going to pick the same outsider that I picked last year.
Oh.
Luca Brasil.
Might drop.
Is he an outsider? He's the defending champion. People have said, he's not an outsider. Well, okay, that's an opinion, but he's had a very low-key season. I just think, though, going there, he will be motivated, incentivised to do well. Unless he has a nightmare first-round draw, where he is in the draw is actually quite beneficial in the top half. I've looked at it, and if he gets deep into the event, i.e. into the quarterfinals, you know what he's like. He's popped up at various intervals in his career out of nowhere and played inspirational snooker as he did 12 months ago in Sheffield. His ceiling is very high. I said those same words on the podcast when we were sitting here chatting last year. His ceiling is very, very high. At his best, he can be devastating. Some of his performances at the Crucible last year under pressure were remarkable. So he'd be my outsider, the title holder.
Well, that would be the Crucible curse down the toilet. That's not going to happen, is it, Phil? Listen, I think he's going to have a good championship too. I think he could do a Ken or a Joe, get to the final, and I'd love to see that. But, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see him win again, actually, but the Crucible curse cannot be eradicated, all right? That's that.
Yeah, I thought about Luca as well. I think I agree with the boys. I think he's going to have a big championship. I think the draw, depending who he gets, when is it, a week on Thursday, isn't going to be crucial, but if he can get a nice safe passage through, he's got potentially Rob Milkins or another qualifier in round two, and that might just get him into that groove. Going back to that match against O'Sullivan last time out at 10-6 behind, I don't think anyone gave him a prayer of overturning O'Sullivan. To be fair, Ronnie was absolutely dreadful in that last session. He was as poor as I've ever seen him, certainly at the Crucible. But Luca did his job, and he's not frightened. That's the thing I think you have to be at Sheffield, is not be frightened to pick up that silver jug at the end of the thing, and he certainly isn't on the evidence of last year. I think he's got a big shout again, yeah.
Yeah, everyone remembers the O'Sullivan performance, obviously the comeback in the semi-finals, but I was commentating for Eurosport in his match against Mark Williams, and under pressure at the end of that match, he finished off absolutely brilliantly.
He's under different pressure though now, he's picked. I mean, it's undeniable. My only prediction is for him, he'll either win 10-9 on the first day or lose 10-9. That'll be a decider, and he'll either win it or lose it, and I would spin a coin as to which one. I think he would accept, if he sort of looked back on the season, he did sort of switch off at one point. He got a lot of money and the adulation and all that stuff, and he enjoyed himself, which is fine. But that kind of carried on into the sort of winter months when a lot of the players were winning tournaments. He made a decision not to go to Wuhan. He pulled out, didn't want to go. Judd Trump won the English Open. He got straight on the plane and went and won that as well. That was kind of the difference then. And I think he lost a bit of sort of sharpness by just not playing. He didn't get in the ITV events. We haven't seen enough of the world champion for me, which is a shame, because when we saw him in Riyadh, he got to the final. And I think now, I mean, all this stuff about not practicing, all that has gone out the window. I think he's switched on. He wants to do well there. You know, he's world champion. He'd be very proud, quite rightly, to walk out there. So a big performance is in him. The problem is, there's big performances in a lot of people there. And I think that first day, Steve Davis, a quote from him years ago when he was defending champion, he said, it's a big banana skin playing on day one. He said, the first shock hasn't happened, and it could be you. And it could very easily be Luca, but equally, if he gets through that, his draw is quite favourable, I think, compared to where he could be. So you never know. He is, I think it's a good choice for an outsider, but it kind of, it's odd in a way that, well, you compared him last year to Joe, and of course Joe did that. He got to the final, very, very nearly kind of won it again.
Yeah, so, and Luca's season this season has been marginally better than Joe's was when he got to the final in 87. Yeah. One thing I will say about Luca, you know, you're right, he did switch off, but he can easily switch on as well. This draw has never been more influential. If he draws Neil Robertson in the first round, Jack Lazowski, what a tough task on day one. But I was speaking to him in Saudi Arabia, actually, and I was explaining to him the fact that the defending champion has a very favourable schedule in many respects. You play on the first day, you don't play again until the Thursday or the Friday. And he liked that, the fact he was going to ease into the event. So maybe having that exposure on day one and winning that match will do him a favour.
Talking of the first round, we saw Knowlesy a couple of days ago, didn't we? He was, you know, the most famous first time champion he did for the Nugget, didn't he? 10-1, 42 years ago. So, yeah, it could be a 10-9 either way, but yeah, he's got a big shout for a number of reasons. Mm.
Okay, Alan, so we're outsider.
Yeah, I'm going to go with another member of the top 16, actually. As said about Judd, you're looking for certain criteria, someone who's not afraid to win it. You also, obviously, in an ideal world, you want good form, and he's got it. It's Gary Wilson. I think he's had his issues down the years with his action. I know I've spoke probably more than anyone about Ding in that regard. Gary's had some of those problems, but what I'm seeing this week, there's no or very few quick deliveries, which I love. I also think he's a natural scorer. Well, we know he's a natural scorer. I also actually, although Gary Wilson to me is a very confident lad, the way he plays, I also think he's better than he thinks he is. You know, you get those guys who, there's the two sides of that fence. There's guys who are, I think, are better than they think they are, and there's a lot of, there's probably more people who are not as good as they think they are. And I actually think Gary Wilson, because of his scoring, it's like that natural goal scorer thing. There was a striker who used to play for Italy. I can't remember. He played with AC Milan. He was absolutely hopeless as a footballer, but he scored goals. Can't remember his name, sorry, it escapes me. But he's a bit like that, I think. Just a natural scorer. His temperament's improved dramatically, I think. I believe he's working behind the scenes with someone. And actually the way he stood up to Ronnie just this week, I think, tells you that in a long match, he's actually feeling it now in the company of the... I was watching him in not at the table against O'Sullivan, and I think he's also smarter than you would maybe perceive. And I'll give you an example. I think some of the moves he was making against O'Sullivan this week were like, do you know what? I'm going to try and kind of copy the way he does this. I'm just going to kind of just be a bit off the cuff at times and just kind of roll with it and not worry about the winning, just play. A bit like Luca is able to do, I think. I just think Gary is going to take an awful lot of stopping. He's in quite an interesting little section of draw, which escapes me. I haven't got it just in front of me at the moment. But I just think he's got a really big chance. I think looking at the two finals, or actually the three most recent of those wins in the home nations, he absolutely blew away the opposition. Joe O'Connor, what was it, Knockon and Martin O'Donnell. Yes, that's not the most demanding of opposition in any ranking final, but the occasion, it just didn't bother him. I actually thought O'Connor would beat him. He blew Joe away. I thought Knockon would beat him. He disposed of him with a minimum of fuss. I think he's got not a big chance of winning it, but I think he's on certainly a short list of seven or eight names.
There you go. Big danger man, I think. Big danger man. Neil.
Gary Wilson for me too. Okay. Been with him thinking for a while he could win it. He might end up quite close to another selection, Sean Murphy, depending on who wins the final of the tour. So that would be strange if they were to play each other. But even then, you know, that's the way. I completely agree with Alan with him. He's one thing that is apparent, he's good enough, I think. He's been in a semi-final that year. He beat Luca, he beat Sean Murphy, he beat Mark Selby, and he beat Ali Carter. I mean, those three have a long match. He's beaten them. And now he's a better player. He's had a terrific season. It took O'Sullivan absolutely to dig deep to beat him the other night in the tour. He's just a really good player. I know that he can boil over a little bit, you know, sometimes, and start waving his arms around and stuff. That's how he moves. But to me, he's got a live chance, and there's no reason to think that he can't add to what he achieved in 2019. I think he's got a brilliant opportunity this year, probably his best ever chance.
Strangely, I think when he sort of does ball over, it seems to be when he starts playing well. I mean, which is often the opposite. It's like he knows deep down that he is good. He almost needs reminding, and strangely, that business with the foul the other day seemed to work in his favour. He finds, a bit like Ronnie really, like suddenly a couple of frames where he just can't miss. And when he won the Scottish Open last season, that quarter final against Ronnie, it's almost like he just decided there was no pressure, like almost subconsciously, I'm just going to play. And we saw how good he was. And I mean, it's his best ever chance. I mean, I know he's been in the semis as a qualifier, but it's his best ever chance to kind of prove to people who maybe don't watch the home nations, actually, yeah, I'm a top player.
He goes to the Crucible as the world number 10, which is his highest ranking by, I think, two spots. And also, you know, all of this talk about I'm not happy with my Q action, it's not for effect. We went to the Hanoi Open in Vietnam last year, and Gary played because he loves his nine ball pool, and we had a chat
to you, Phil.
Yeah. I do. And we had a chat out there, and he was saying this to me in private back then, that he wasn't happy with his Q action, that he wasn't getting it through smoothly without going into the intricacies. It wasn't a case of, you know, him trying to sort of portray to the media that he's still winning despite having problems. He genuinely thinks he's got problems, and yet despite all of that, he's having a wonderful season, his best ever, two ranking titles in the bag. And I agree with Neil and Alan, he's been to the semi-finals, so he knows what to expect. And the other thing with Wilson is when he plays with side, I think he's absolutely brilliant, some of the shots he pulls off. And that tells you that he's got a real arsenal of shots, and that's what you need at the Crucible. You need to do everything. And also, he's quite tactically savvy.
Before, sorry, one other thing I want to say, I'm not going to tip another player, but I just want to say, if you're looking for someone like last year, I mean, who tipped up CJ Wee to get to the semis last year? No one thought it. Very patchy profile of good and bad. I'm thinking Wu Yizhe in the qualifiers. If he could be the next player to do that sort of thing. Wu Yizhe, I'm not saying he will, but you think how he played there last year against Robertson. Robertson had to play out of his boots to beat him. Now, he's all over the place, Wu Yizhe. But if he qualifies, he could do what CJOE did. Anyway, that's that.
Sorry, just on, strangely enough, myself and Neil have picked Gary Wilson. I was also going to pick Wu Yizhe. I know that I actually flagged him up 3, 4, 5 years ago because I played him in the championship and he impressed the heck out of me. He's got so much potential. Strangely enough, he's in the section with CJOE at qualies.
Yeah.
So they might play each other, might play each other to qualify. But I totally agree with Neil. I'd love to see Wu Yizhe qualify. I think he's got so much. And Phil talks about Arsenal shots. He's got tons of them. He hits the ball lovely. And if he can learn the other side of it, which takes some players longer than others, he's got a chance of having a great championship. Just very quickly, actually, I remember that goal scorer. I never thought I would name the name. Filippo Inzaghi.
There he goes, yeah.
It, so there, anyway, that was
you've salvaged it there, Alan. People did, wanted to know. You know?
One other thing, of course, with Wilson that might be in his favour, it's the 50th anniversary of Graham Miles getting to the World Championship final.
Oh, he loves the comparisons to that.
Well, he's a left-eye starter, that's all I'm going to say.
That should be enough for him to win it. That alone, Dave. You're not going with Wilson or Wiggins, surely?
No, I'm not. No, one thing I will say before he is a top 16 player, but someone will come out of the pack and be a quarter finalist, maybe a semi finalist. I mean, CJOE, yes, Jack Jones last year,
nobody
tipped him probably to qualify. His sort of draw was tough, obviously, he had to play Hawkins. Someone will come through the pack and play well, and there are quite often Welsh actually that get to the quarters, aren't they? But that's a separate issue. Dylan Emery, maybe, who knows? Someone could
good
do that.
Player.
Yeah, someone could do that. But I'm gonna throw into the mix Zhang Ander. You know, a year ago, he wouldn't have been discussed, he wasn't. An extraordinary story. I mean, the Player of the Year crown, you know, is still up for grabs. The Most Improved Player of the Year crown is absolutely his. I think, I mean, I don't particularly think he'll win it, but he's become someone who no one wants to play, I think. He's obviously a bit slower than some of the others, so when he's at the table playing well, it takes a while, but he's impressive. He's got this sort of outward calm that I think would annoy some people. He looks like he's enjoying himself, he looks like he's not bothered, and he's turned into, not gradually, but almost overnight, a top player. Obviously, he's won a tournament, been in two finals this season. I think he could cause problems there. And, you know, as I say, I don't particularly think he would win the tournament, but he could stop a few of the other people we've mentioned here winning it, possibly. I think he's become someone you just don't want to play. Everyone is wary of him now, whereas a year ago, even, they'd have thought, well, you know, there's tougher draws than him.
If Zhang Ander had been a billiard player, he would have been a good one, because billiards requires people to sustain concentration at the table for lengthy periods of time, and he does that brilliantly, doesn't he? When he starts to score, you never think he's going to miss, and he doesn't just pop the ball, Stephen Hendry's made this point, he pops them in the middle of the pockets. It's as though he gets himself into some kind of potting and scoring trance, which is very difficult to break.
He's one of those players, actually, that you sort of touched on the point I'm going to pick up on, Dave. He's difficult to play against because he's quite annoying. He's one of those, he's just good at everything. And I mean, I don't mean temperament and long game and all that. He's just, you know those shots where you think, or you sort of sit up out your chair thinking, all right, he's in a bit of trouble here. And he rolls it in and you're like, oh, fuck. Crying out loud, off he goes again. He is. He's very, very difficult to play against because you can't read him. Do you know what? He's a little bit, but in a different way, like Mark Williams. You can't get a read on him. You don't know how he's feeling, how he's doing. He can produce rubbish and he can produce genius for 3, 4, 5 frames, as you say. Again, the only thing I would say against him is the pace of play. At some stage, someone's going to maybe steamroller him. Obviously, you're not saying he's going to win it, although he clearly could. It's an interesting selection. I think we've all given him consideration in it for good reason. He's a terrific player.
I could see him getting to the one table, maybe. Again, I've not really studied the draw, but it's not about that. I'm going to sort of wrap up shortly, but Neil Robertson, is he going to qualify?
Yes, I think he will. Although I don't think it's a certainty, and I think the fact the bookmakers have made him 14-1 fifth favourite when you consider that people like Mark Williams are quoted at 25-1, I think that's quite miserly. I rate Neil Robertson very, very highly. At his best, he is simply sensational. But he's not been at his best this season. He's been miles off his best. And at the Crucible, for the last number of years, he's not been at his best, apart from in the first couple of rounds. So there's a lot against him. But if he can recapture the old magic, who knows, he could win.
It's incredible that we're talking about these guys. We've got two picks and we've covered a few other names. And we pretty much haven't mentioned Mark Williams, John Higgins, and although Ronnie's been mentioned, no one's picked him.
We haven't mentioned Mark Selby either, which is a bit rough, isn't it, to be honest?
Yeah.
But it's almost like that, like you say about Ronnie, it's almost like they're too obvious. But the reason they're too obvious is because they invariably either win it or get to the final, I suppose. I mean, they are, you talk about Crucible players, they're just great players. But they found a way there of taking that and winning the biggest tournament time and time again.
Before we sort of wrap up, I would like to get you guys, and I think the listeners would like to hear, I wanted to throw a player's name out there and get your thoughts on him and what sort of championship he's going to have, because he's another, he's actually a more forgotten man, I think, than Sean Murphy. It's Kyren. Where does Kyren stand in his game?
It's interesting because literally, I mean, obviously got to the final in 2020. He was talked about as this phrase Crucible player. Oh, he was just well at the Crucible. That semi-final defeat to Sean was a bit scarring. I mean, obviously, you know, afterwards he was disappointed, but he would be. That was maybe a big chance to, you know, to press on to the final and give Selby a big game. He's fallen away a little bit, hasn't he, this season. He's had... I won't go into what happened, but there was a horrible match he lost to Gjurkrang in the qualifiers, which was very unlucky. Mm. And since that point, he's not quite been cursed, but he hasn't quite moved forward from there. It's not to say he won't at the Crucible, but he is the forgotten man a little bit. I mean, he was in the Tour Championship last year, he played brilliantly in that. Another player we haven't seen as much of as we might have expected.
Isn't it funny, that match you mentioned against Gjurkrang, is right, he caught the bump of the right middle pocket and dropped in behind the blue. Kyren left the red and he lost the match in the decider. It's kind of similarities with Neil Robertson, that match with Joe O'Connor about 15 months ago or 16 months ago in the Scottish at 3-all. He had 3 tons and it's 3-all. Neil Robertson, this is, and he's on 50 odd and actually went for a red to play for another century. And Joe O'Connor went nuts and beat him 6-3, I think it was. And he's suffered ever since. It's been
Well, I think that with Kyren last year battering against John Higgins, he hasn't recovered from. Never mind that match against Gjurkrang. I mean, he lost the first 10. Higgins made 2 total clearances in the first 2. Maybe that's the match that has sort of kippered him a little bit, because he hasn't been quite the same since. I'd like to see him do well. I think he's a terrific player, you know, but I couldn't be backing him. If I'm wrong, then I'd be pleased for Kyren.
He'd be a great world champion because he's a smashing lad. And he's also a model professional. I think his problem has been that he got to a certain level and thought it wasn't quite good enough to contend in the biggest events. It was, let me tell you, because when he played his best, he was sensational. So what he's done, he's trying to find that extra 10%. He's experimented with cues, and at the moment, that's the disclaimer, at the moment, the experiment has most certainly not worked. It could, but right now, the jury's very much out for me.
He must be one of the most frustrated snooker players going around the top echelons of the game, actually, because he probably should have won the Champion of Champions a bunch of years ago against Ronnie in the final. He was very unlucky. But he has no triples, whatever we want to call them. You know, he doesn't have those big titles under his belt that everyone else has. He's won tournaments in Germany, 3-4 of them, whatever. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts, because
and I know we're wrapping up, Dave, but we can't really just mention Mark Selby once. And you know, the fact is, I thought he was acquitted himself brilliantly last year's championship. You know, the way that he regrouped, he had that bruising match against Mark Allen, which he won. It was the early hours of the final when he finished. Luca came at him absolutely straight away in that final. I saw him walking back with Vicky after that first session. He was absolutely exhausted and he just wanted to get back to his hotel for an hour. He regrouped, made that 147. He chucked everything at Luca. When he lost to Luca at the reception, all the fans were there, had a great night. Yeah, what a bloke. I just want to say that.
Can I know this is your pod, Dave, and you ask the questions better than any of us lot, but can I just ask one question? Yeah. John Higgins, yes or no?
No, I don't think so. I think John... things have sort of almost got on top of him, I think, in terms of the way he feels about his game. He's playing really well in general, but just things are sort of going wrong and he's not recovering. If you look at Mark Williams, his sort of attitude of, oh, you know, I'll just turn up and see what happens. John is the opposite. He seems very intense about his game. Now, he could certainly stop other people winning it. He could get on some sort of run. Do I think he's going to win it? No. I'd love to see it. It'd be fantastic, obviously. It'd be fantastic. I just can't see it.
I think John is so perceptive when it comes to shot selection. But I think in this instance, his self-perception is askew. I agree with Dave. I think he's playing really, really well. The problem is, I don't think he believes he's playing really well. If he could just break out of that, he's got all of the game to win the championship. And if he did, I'd love to see it. Because he's the most all-round match player you could possibly ever wish to see. And if he were to win again at the Crucible, I think it would be a great story. As indeed would Ding. I say that every year, just throw it in.
Well, I was just going to say, actually, because that's one name that's not come up. I mean, well, we were there in Beijing when he won the China Open that started all the boom and everything. And every year it's, you know, wouldn't it be great for snooker? But it's never happened, has it? And that's the fact. I mean, does anybody think it could possibly happen?
He's actually maybe these days a little bit like John, strangely enough. Sorry, I didn't give Neil a chance to answer that.
John, the answer is no to John.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes or no, absolutely.
I think that they're actually a little bit similar, Neil and John. Are they, snooker's not a get lifting weights and all that, are they strong enough, you know, from bulk these days? Where you have to, like Luca is like a colossus from bulk, isn't it, when he's on. Do they have that? Perhaps no.
I'm well aware I come out with the same two chestnuts every year. But I'm going to do
that. Give him another air.
Here's one chestnut, here's the other. So, the first one is, regardless of who you think will win the championship, if Ding were to win it, I think it would have the most beneficial effect for snooker in general, because it would further improve that massive market in China. Say that every year, but it's true. The second thing is, and this is year on year I've been saying this, and the discussion we've just had proves it, I think this is the toughest world championship to call ever.
Well, yeah, as we've proven over the last 40 minutes. I mean, Ronnie O'Sullivan is definitely the favourite. I don't think anyone would dispute
that.
It has
to be.
There's a sense of destiny about winning it, but, you know, it doesn't always work out how you feel. We don't know who's going to qualify, but the qualifier, I'm going to say it, the qualifier's on Discovery Plus from Monday, and 10 days of that, Judgment Day on the World Snooker YouTube and Facebook channels, the World Challenger itself on the BBC, Eurosport, Discovery Plus, and other platforms, Matchroom Live around the world. Excited, Phil?
Very much so, yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great time of year, and, you know, over those 17 days, the one thing that's guaranteed, no results are guaranteed, but drama is.
Yeah, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, obviously can't wait. Every year, actually, I think you get more and more fond of it. That's just the nature of it, isn't it? Because it's become, it's the fabric of your life, isn't it, as part of that? And, I just can't wait. Just one other thing, just to let your viewers know, Dave, I'm going to try in the next week or 10 days to try. I'm not very technically gifted at anything really, but certainly not with technology, phones and all that. I would like to, let's put it this way, set up a little podcast to do a Crucible breakfast every day of the championship. I'm hoping I can set it up. You probably won't listen anyway, all you people, but if I get round to it, and the technical guy gives me enough help, then I would be glad to do that. A half-hour programme of what's to come and what happened yesterday. Okay. Anyway, but I can't wait.
So what you're saying is you're setting yourself up as a rival. But final word from you, Neil, looking forward to it?
Listen, when Luca walks out with three others on the first day, we're in, aren't we, straight away. It'll all be the same, you know, the same setup, the same arena, Crucible Theatre. Then we're banging it, aren't we, for the next 17 days.
And just to say, this is not going to be recorded, but Neil is doing a little quiz for some of the commentators on the night before. He hasn't said much about it, apart from the fact we won't know the answers.
147 points up for grabs, and the quiz could be, you know, it could go elsewhere afterwards. I might sell it.
Well, you know, people mocked Ken Bruce all those years ago with Potmaster, but look at him now. Rolling in it.
Yeah, not even on Radio 2 anymore. No, we'll see how that goes.
Well, we'll let you know who wins, unless it's not me. Thank you, everybody. The World Championship is upon us, and there's no better time of the year.
So that's it. Thanks to the guys for their comments, and we will, of course, be updating you throughout the championship, and indeed before that, there'll be plenty more to come. We're proud members of the Sports Social Network, and you can email us snookerscenepodcast@mail.com, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. Send us your predictions. What's going to happen at the Crucible? We'll find out shortly, but for now, as you always say, it's goodbye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.